All right, he's back.
Yeah, so excited. Oh, he's back.
Glad to
they're
have this
back.
Event back on the schedule. Missed it last year. But joining us now, we have Bert Bain, the VP of Golf Operations at the Greenbrier. Bert, what's going on, my man?
Oh, we're just sitting around with our feet up.
You got nothing but time. Nothing but time.
No, we are very busy still. We're in tournament preparation, grooming, fairways, tees, bunkers. The tour agronomy team and competition have been here. This is what we call advance week. But everything's going to be ready for the players when they start arriving. First few will filter in on Sunday afternoon, and then everybody will be here on Monday.
Yeah, a little different than this time 1 year ago. Just kind of talk about what happened, and you know, I love the response that you guys had in terms of helping out the community.
Well, it was amazing. I've never seen anything like it. It was just a rainstorm in the morning, but it never quit. And by the end of the day, we'd had 11 inches of rain. If you know kind of West Virginia, it's very mountainous, and so we drain a large area beyond just the Greenbrier through the golf courses, and that water coming downstream was just full of all kinds of debris. Eventually, you know, riding lawnmowers and cars and parts of houses and refrigerators, and so it basically just wiped out three golf courses. But you know, more tragically, it wiped out a lot of people's homes, and many of our neighbors lost their lives and loved ones. So it was a disaster for this entire area, and the response from everyone, from you know, Samaritan's Purse to FEMA, the Red Cross, it was just wonderful to see how people rallied and helped the folks that had, some people had lost everything they owned.
Now what kind of help was the Greenbrier able to provide to some of the folks in duress out there?
Well, you know, we ask all of our guests to depart because we didn't have full power, so we couldn't run our kitchen and things. And Mr. Justice opened the hotel to about 300 local residents who had nowhere to stay. So at least they had a room, a roof over their head. We had sandwiches, didn't have hot food for a couple of days. We didn't have hot water, but we had, you know, you could take a shower if you could stand cold water. And it just gave them a place to collect themselves. And, you know, the hotel was a great asset for the community during that 10-12 day period when we had a lot of the community had no water, no power, no gas. It was like a, you know, you'd wake up every morning, it was a little surreal. There was very little, you know, sounds going on. It was eerily quiet.
Well, and I suspect at first, you know, thoughts are right on golf. You know, what are we going to do here? And immediately when the gravity of the situation, you know, became so real for everyone there, golf became secondary. So when it was time to turn your attention back to golf and preparing the golf course for everyday play, but also for the return of this event, was that a very satisfying and exciting time around the facility?
It's been very gratifying to just be a small part of this as just a member of the team and to watch what these guys have been able to do in 1 year. When the players get here, I think a lot of them have a perception that we patched up the course so that they could play the tournament. From the day one, when we started talking about what we were going to do with the golf courses, Mr. Justice was very specific. He did not want the course patched up. He wanted it restored. It's a C.B. McDonald classic built in 1914, and he was not going to settle for something that had, you know, 10 greens that were 4 or 5 years old and 8 greens that were brand new. So what we had to do was bring in contractors and an architect. We hired Keith Foster, who's a genius when it comes to restoring these old McDonald Rainer tilling gas type golf courses. And we basically rebuilt every green, every bunker, every fairway, realigned the tee boxes, and just it's a brand new golf course. So when the players start arriving, they're going to be I guess maybe in some ways a little disappointed to find out they have to learn 18 new green surfaces.
Well, and that was one of the things I was thinking about, in how different will the course look? I mean, sometimes this kind of devastation, you know, is also as there's an opportunity on the backside that you can take a look at things that maybe you'd like to change that you never had the opportunity to, and now you did.
We didn't make very many large changes to the golf course routing because, again, Keith is very authentic when it comes to these old courses. He doesn't like to do things that he doesn't believe McDonald Rayner would have done when they were here. So you have to remember they built the golf course using mules to move dirt. Mm-hmm. So he was very judicious in those type changes. What did change, though, were the grasses. So we now have the most modern and best grasses in all of our areas, roughs, the brand new fairway grass, brand new greens grass, new seed bed material. So from an agronomic standpoint, the golf course is miles better than it was before. The general look of it, the tee shots and things like that, not too much different. Once they get on and around the greens, most of the bunkers were moved closer to the putting surfaces. So that's going to be a change. There's no longer kind of that no man's land between the bunker and the green that had occurred over 100 years, and the green surfaces themselves are going to be firm and fast. Keith kind of flattened a lot of the greens, took out some of the severe contours that had been added by other architects that had worked on that course over the last 50, 60 years, and so we're able to go with a higher stimp rating. We can start the week at 12.
Again, we're talking with Bert Bain, VP of Golf Operations for the Greenbrier, and okay, so where are we in preparation? What's the weather been like this year, and what kind of golf course are we going to see? We're going to see firm and fast. We're going to see some deep rough. You already told me we're going to have some fast greens. What else are we going to see?
Yeah, the rough is a very consistent because it was sodded. So, you know, generally rough tends to get, you know, inconsistent over many years. But this is off from the edge of the fairway out about 30 yards is brand new bluegrass sod. So if you hit it off the fairway, you're going to have a difficult lie. It is going to be firm, both fairways and greens. Anytime you have new seed beds, you're going to be firm for the first few years. I think it's going to take a player that's smart. It's not a real long golf course. It's a par 70. It's a guy who can keep it in the fairway. A person could win this tournament that doesn't drive it more than 275. Now, that doesn't mean that Gary Woodland won't win because he can hit it 350, but it's not a requirement. The most important thing here is going to be to get the ball in the right place on the greens to be able to be aggressive with your putting.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the scorecard, I mean, theoretically, it could play out around 7,000 or a little longer, but you never know how they're going to set it up. I'm looking at I love ending with a par 3. I think that's unusual, and it's cool, and it makes the event unique in that sense in terms of the sight lines to see the finish, and not a particularly difficult par 3 unless you miss it badly. Where can we see players, stretches of holes, where we'll see players be able to score, and where might we see a stretch of holes that they're going to have trouble?
I would say that the scoring is going to occur coming in, really, from about 14 to 18 are great scoring opportunities. 14 is a medium length par 4. 15 is a par 3 that these guys will be hitting probably a 6 or 7 iron 2. 16 is a slightly changed par 4, but they'll have a short iron in their hand. 17 is a reachable par 5, and then 18, as you said, is not a long par 3. The green has been configured to be kind of like it was in the early 20s. And so it's got a thumbprint is what Keith calls it, right in the center. And I do agree with you that it's really cool having the 18th hole be a par 3. We've seen a lot of two-shot swings. You know, it only takes one good shot to hit it close, and you made a birdie, and the other got three putts, and you, boom, you know, you got a big swing. So I think that the scoring can be – the tournament can be won or lost from 14 in.
So, Bert, when you start talking about final scores, you know, knowing what you know, where do you think this is going to fall this year?
Well, I'll probably make a fool out of myself, but I'm going to say 12 to 14 under.
Yeah. That sounds like a good number.
We've got scores here as high as 22 under back when Stuart Appleby won with the 59, and we've had winners as low as 10 under. I'm going to say 12 to 14 under is a good score.
So when the tournament is finished and you know, everything gets buttoned up in that following week, do you guys see a surge in people that want to come out and play the golf course in the configuration of the PGA Tour?
Monday we've got 132 players on the books right now for something that we call Sunday Pins. So after the tournament, if the tournament finishes on Sunday as it's scheduled to, the hole locations will not be changed, and 132 players will have an opportunity on Monday to go out and test themselves from an appropriate set of tees, but to the same hole locations that the tournament was played on Sunday. We're booked solid on Tuesday and Wednesday, so there's no rest for the wicked. The week after the tournament is a big week for us. very busy.
Now, do you have trouble getting people to play from the appropriate tees on that Monday? Does everybody want to hit it from where the big boys go?
Well, yeah.
So yeah. What kind of counseling do you do in the pro shop?
Probably plays from one set of tees too far back, except for me and Trevino. We play from the white tees.
Well, I'm looking at the last group of winners, Stuart Appleby, you mentioned Scott Stallings, Ted Potter Jr., Jonas Blixt, and Angel Cabrera, and Danny Lee. So whose game right now are you seeing out there who we might be able to expect, play well?
Well, it's always hard to handicap these guys because they get hot so fast. But I would look at Kevin Kisner. He's playing well.
Yeah.
Patrick Reed has been playing well. A dark horse would be somebody like Daniel Summerhays, not well known, but he's played really well here in past years. We would love to see Bubba and Phil, our two resident professionals, play well and get in the mix. And then, there's always the guy who pops up. There's Stuart Cink. This is a golf course. Danny Lee. Listen, Danny Lee's playing really well. I wouldn't surprise me if he's in contention. But this is a course where, a guy can just get it going a little bit, and he doesn't have to do anything extraordinary to make some birdies.
Yeah, wasn't it the case in 2014? Didn't Angel Cabrera just play well the whole week? It wasn't anything spectacular, but...
Yeah, he just played. He didn't miss any shots.
Okay,
Angel Cabrera is a man. He hits it so far. He can reach every par five, both of them. He's... He holed out an 8-iron from 168 yards on the 13th hole for a 2. So that gives you an idea of how far he hits it. Mm. But Cabrera, he gets his blinders on. He's won 3 tournaments, the U.S. Open, the Masters, and the Greenbrier Classic. So we're in pretty good company.
Yeah, pretty good resume there.
Yeah, Angel's just one of those guys that he loves the driver, and he's just going to take the driver out. He's going to step up. He's going to rip it, and he's just going to go find it. And when it goes in the fairway an awful lot, which it's done 3 times in his career on the PGA Tour, it works out really well, doesn't it?
If he's driving well, he's very dangerous. I'll tell you another interesting thing we've got going this week. We've got two Davis Loves in the field. We've got 3 and 4.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, at least 3 has now been promoted to player, not just caddy, right?
Correct.
He might have got fired because, the success wasn't that great at the U.S. Open for Drew. So maybe Davis III got fired as the caddy, and maybe his fallback position was to go back and play PGA Tour golf.
Well, he's had good success here.
Yeah.
He really has. He's played well. Johnson Wagner from Charlotte has played well here.
Yeah, there seems to be some definite horses for that course up there, and it's going to be interesting to see now that you've done the restoration if those horses are still viable for that course or if it's a different track for them now.
Yep, I agree with that. And but again, it's mostly on the green, so the guys that the course fits their eye, they're going to be fine. They're not going to see a lot of change in what the tee shots look like.
Well, Bert, man, we always appreciate you coming on. I'm glad you guys are back this year, back on the schedule, and hope everything goes great for you.
Well, thank you very much, and hello to all my friends in Charlotte. I spent a number of years there at the TPC Piper Glen and also at Pine Lake, so shout out to all my friends back there. And to all you Charlatans, it's just a short drive, about 4 hours and 15 minutes straight up 77. Come see us at the Greenbrier.
Yep, tickets are available, so get out there and get some tickets and head up there.
Well, and come on afterwards and play some golf.
Yeah, but not the week after. You're busy. Yeah. 2 weeks after. Start coming up 2 weeks after.
Thanks a lot, Bert.
September and October are fabulous.
Yeah, thanks, Bert.
Thank you, guys.